Thank you, Jamie, for such a beautiful and encouraging piece. I have to admit, I shed a tear during that. It's very, very moving and very meaningful, the way that God wants to care for us and love us. Well, brethren, happy Sabbath to you all. It's good to see your smiling faces. I'm very happy for the sun. Very happy for, as Mr. Kinsella was talking about in the announcements, all the wonderful things we can get out and dig our hands into, the things that God created, the green things, the brown things, meaning the dirt. I'm still having trouble with the whole yellow jacket thing, though. I'm kind of, you know, everything has a place in God's plan, and I know they serve some good purpose. I'm just having trouble finding it. I killed my 10th queen yellow jacket here recently. I've been keeping count. I've been named the Mighty Hunter by people at work. Yeah. yeah. So anyway, the message I have today, I gave this in Bend last month, and I know there's at least one person here from Bend today, so my apologies, you get to hear it again. With one caveat, which we'll get to here pretty shortly here. But, brethren, as we look at times that the characters that make up the Old Testament, some of the figures that we read about, and look at their lives, what they did, how they lived their lives, have you ever noticed how many of those considered righteous or faithful didn't always lead the best life? At least that's how it looks on the surface. Samson immediately comes to my mind. He spent a good part of his life running around chasing after foreign women, and yet his name appears in the faith chapter in Hebrews chapter 11. Well, I want to talk a little bit about this today as far as one particular figure in the Bible goes. It's a little different from the messages that I ordinarily give, but I want to focus on one of those characters today, one who's been a curiosity to me personally, one who appeared on the surface to live a somewhat, perhaps selfish and not so careful life, punctuated with several not so good decisions. And yet in the end, he was held in high esteem as an example to those who would come later, including us, of both what to do in our lives and what not to do. So I'd like to look at the story of Lot today. I want to look at the story of Lot. Let's learn a little bit about him and the lessons that we might glean from his life. Lot lived a life of ups and downs, like so many of us. And it seems that if you look at the account, there was more downs and ups for him, and that many of those downs were really his own doing. But I would argue that looking at the story of Lot's life on the surface doesn't necessarily paint a true picture of him. So again, we'll look at Lot today. Look at his background. The Bible doesn't talk a whole bunch about everything about his life. So some things that we're going to talk about are going to be a little bit open to conjecture, perhaps, and maybe some speculation. I'll try to make sure I identify those things when I get to them. But as long as we can base it on what we are actually told in the Bible, I think we'll do well. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I want to point out Mr. Frank Dunkel gave a message about Lot's life back in 2015. You can find it on the UCG website. And for a while, our messages are going to sound suspiciously similar, so I want to throw that out right there. They're going to really follow along with each other, so tried really hard not to plagiarize. But I want to follow with the biblical account of Lot's life up to a point, and then I want to come to a slightly different point from what he did in the end. So let's go ahead and dig in. We'll begin in Genesis chapter 11, where we first hear about Lot in the Bible. Genesis chapter 11 and verse 27. And I really need to invest in some new glasses, I think. Okay, Genesis 11, and we'll begin in verse 27, and we'll read verses 28, 31, and 32. Okay, Genesis 11, verse 27. This is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Haran begot Lot. So Lot was born, and Haran was his father. And Haran died before his father Terah in his native land in Ur of the Chaldeans. Verse 31, going down to verse 31. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. Let's go ahead in verse 32 also. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, we're not sure here where Haran, Lot's father, actually died. It's possible here, it doesn't say exactly when he died, but it's possible that Lot had to grow up without his father, at least to some point, some degree. So there are some questions we can ask here, perhaps. How was Lot raised? Was he adopted by Abram after the death of his own father? And what kind of influence could Abram have had on Lot as they spent time together? Now, I'm going to make a little correction from when I was talking to Ben here. If you look at verse 29, verse 29 mentions Milcah, the daughter of Haran. And I had said in the message, well, I don't think Lot had any siblings. And all of a sudden, there was all this whispering. And so I go, I missed something here. It's amazing. When you're trying to drive to a certain point, you can read right over things sometimes. Really careful. My wife pointed this out to me. I'm very thankful for her in light of Mr. Buchanan's message about wives and mothers today. Wonderful help. I thank her for this. So she pointed out to me that, yes, indeed, Lot could have had a sister here, Milcah. Doesn't say exactly how she influenced his life, if there was anything in that regard. But to know that that was part of the family. So it's possible, in light of this, that he likely had the adults primarily in his family that he looked up to and looked to for life examples. Okay, so with that background, we'll go to Genesis 12 next, where God instructed Abram to leave his home and journey to a new land. As Mr. Buchanan said, kicked him out of the basement. Time to go. Get out of here. Leave. So in Genesis 12 and verse 4, we'll just read a couple of verses of this. Starting in verse 4, so Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Okay? And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Now you notice that part in verse 4 where it said, and Lot went with him. Okay? We could perhaps conjecture, we don't know for sure, whether Lot actually chose to go with Abram, or Abram said, get over here, kid, you're leaving. Either way, Lot went with him. But if Lot made that conscious choice to go with Abram, if he had the option and he made that choice, it was a good choice. It was a good choice. Because in Abram, he was able, of course, to see a godly life and a godly example of how to do things. Even though Abram made mistakes too, we know the mistake that he made about lying to Pharaoh so that he wouldn't get killed because of his beautiful wife, called her his sister. And it's possible that Lot heard about that at least, if he didn't outright see it. And that may, too, have had an impact on, just like things that happen to us every day. You know, things have impact on us that we see and hear around us. And we have to choose how we respond to those things. But the point here is that the family, both physical and spiritual, is often where we learn life lessons from, both good and not so good. And this is what Lot was doing right here, what he was working with. Okay, let's go next to Genesis chapter 13, skip ahead a little bit, and we'll read the first five verses of Genesis chapter 13, continuing the story. Verse 1 of Genesis 13, then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. So they were still together. Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold, and he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. So with this, Lot with him, Abram being a very rich man, Lot too gained in riches and in business sense and all these things from Abram and from Abram's example. Learning from him how to handle matters of business. Okay? So they both had flocks, they both had herds, they were both wealthy businessmen. Okay, now verse 6, we're going to go a little bit further here. Verse 6, now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and Perizzites then dwelt in the land. Perizzites, not parasites. Not, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, again, the strife that we see here mentioned was not personally between Abram and Lot so much as it was their servants, their herdsmen, because they were in such close quarters together. When you put too many animals and people in one place, there's going to be a little bit of fighting and discomfort and elbowing and not enough room, not enough room. They were competing for resources. Now, continuing a little further yet in verse 8, so Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. Abram set Lot another really good example right here. He generously gave Lot first choice. He put Lot before himself. Verse 10, and Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. Verse 11, then Lot said, Abram, you take that. It's beautiful. I think your flocks and herds will do well there. No, he actually didn't do that. He didn't pick up on Abram's example, apparently, because in verse 11 it says, then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. So Lot chose what appeared to the eye to be the best land, green and well watered. Here's one of those moments, as we go into the story, a lesson for us, where one decision can determine the course of your life. Verse 12, we'll read a couple more here to fill this thought out. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. This is beginning to set the stage for the next several years of what Lot is going to experience. But it shows us, again, that our choices can have a significant impact on our lives. Lot chose what looked to be the best land, green and well watered. It was a reflex for him, apparently. That looks really good. I want that. But as we will see in the story, not everything that looks good is good. As they say in the real estate industry, location, location, location. He's going to find out about that. And also, quoting from the Nelson Study Bible, New King James Version, concerning Genesis 13 and verse 13, I just want to bring this observation out that they had. Quote, Lot's choice of the more favorable land led him into territory that was populated by the worst of the Canaanites, the infamous people of Sodom. The rest of the peoples of Canaan were given 400 years before their idolatry and wickedness demanded judgment. So we have a little bit of a comparison there. Sodom was evil. Now, though sin is sin, and all sin deserving the same punishment as we know, it seemed in this case that there was like a degree of evil that was being made here. And Sodom was in the unenviable position of being at the top of the list. Okay, with that background in mind, considering Lot's living in this area now with this going on, we come in Genesis 14 to what I call the battles of the kings. In these verses leading up to verse 10, all these kings came together and warred with one another. And then they all seemed to gravitate toward, let's take over the kingdoms of Sodom and Gomorrah, take their kings, we're going to pilfer their lands. So they did this in verse 10, breaking into verse 10. The kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, Some fell there, and the remainder fled to the mountains, verse 14. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way. And now verse 12, notice, they also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and took his goods too, and departed. So up to now, other than the dispute between the herdsmen, nothing has been written in the account here about any serious trials or difficult experiences that Lot may have had to deal with in his life. So we could perhaps conjecture that he's had things pretty good up until now. But here Lot gets his first experience and his first inkling about the land and the people that he's chosen to reside in. He's got a chance to experience the nature of the people around him and a chance perhaps to experience and learn something about being in captivity, because he's a prisoner of these kings now. So let's continue this section of passage here in verse 13, Genesis 14, verse 13. Then one who had escaped came and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, yes, and brother of Aner, A-N-E-R, and they were allies with Abram. Now, when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. So he, Abram, brought back all the goods and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. So Abram here figures prominently in the rescue and return of Lot to his land. Abram here carried out the role of father and protector very well. Again, a Lot could take this as an example of how much Abram loves him and cares for him and gives owns the responsibility of caring for family. And it's interesting to note here, at least I thought, that the word brother used in verse 14 here to describe Lot's relationship to Abram, as used in the New King James Version, that word is Strong's number H251. It's like awk, A-W-K-H, and it more or less just means kin. So you see brother and you see other terms here. But it's kind of like his nephew more than anything. I think the New Living Translation uses the word nephew there to kind of get that relationship outline there. All right, so let's move ahead in the story as we go on and we see more of what Lot is going to experience. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 1. Okay, now this is more about Abram, but I want to just bring this in. The first three verses, Genesis 18, verses 1 through 3. Then the Lord appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, "My Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant." Okay? So several significant events, of course, occur in chapter 18 where Abram is concerned. But as our focus today is on Lot, I want to focus on the segment in a moment here. I'll come to that in a moment. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here. But the first three verses where Abram ran and met these people and bowed to them. Did Lot see that? If he did, he witnessed another example of Abram's respect. Of course, Abram knew who these were, but hopefully, again, we don't know, this could have had an impact on Lot. We don't know, but it's there. Okay, now going forward, I want to go to the segment in the chapter now where God is considering judgment on Sodom, where Lot now resides, where things are going to start to get very interesting for Lot. So in continuing in Genesis 18, go down to verse 17, we'll read a little bit about this. And again, God is considering what he's going to do about Sodom. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham," his name is Abraham now, "what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. His children and his household. Again, you know, we know the story about Abraham and Sarah having to wait all that time before Isaac was born. But he had a family he was taking care of. Did that include Lot? Lot may well have been raised with them, or at least was able to witness this godly example being with Abraham and his family, because Abraham was taking care of his own. Verse 20 of Genesis 18, we'll read through verse 22 a little further. Oh, I'm in verse 19. That's not going to work. I really get ahead of myself. Okay, verse 20 of chapter 18. And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me, and if not, I will know. Verse 22. Then the men turned away from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord. I'm going to stop there for a little bit. Abraham knew, of course, that Lot lived in or near the area of Sodom. Lot was family to Abraham. So verse 23 begins the discourse that Abraham has with God that we are familiar with. I'm going to read down through verse 33, from verse 23 to 33, and we'll look at this discourse. Verse 23, and Abraham came near and said, would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there were 50 righteous within the city, would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? So the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. And actually, I'm just going to go ahead and paraphrase this a little bit because we know the story. Eventually, Abraham and God come down to the point where Abraham is bargaining for the lives of 10 righteous. For 10 righteous. Verse 32, let's just go to there. Then he said, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak but once more. Suppose 10 should be found there. And he said, God said, I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. So the Lord went his way as soon as he had finished speaking with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. Now note in all this discourse that we've discussed and paraphrased, Abraham knew, again, that Lot lived in or near Sodom, but at no time did Abraham ever say to the Lord, please spare Lot. But he did say, in essence, please spare the righteous. Okay? And we can put two and two together here pretty quick, but I'm going to talk about this a little later on in the message. So let's continue. Genesis 19 and verse 1. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Okay? So as it states that he is sitting in the gate of the city, it's likely that Lot held a position of high honor or status in many of the cities of the area. One who was in high honor or an elder of some kind sat in the gate of the city where people would go in and out. Continuing in the verse, when Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. That sounds familiar, like what Abraham did with the three men. Now, did Lot know that these men were the messengers of God? At this point, we're not quite sure yet, but he knew that the men were new to the city, and he treated them with great respect. Okay, he bowed himself to them. In verse 2, we'll continue. And he said, hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way. And they said, no, but we will spend the night in the open square. But Lot, insisted strongly. So they turned into him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Now, whether Lot knew these men were messengers of God or not, Lot was totally aware of the city and the society that he lived in. And he showed them great respect, and he made great effort to protect and shield his guests, as we will see. We'll read a little further on down. Verse 4, we'll read through verse 8. Okay, 19, verse 4. Now before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter surrounded the house. And they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally." So Lot went out to them through the doorway, shut the door behind them, and said, "Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof." You know, what Lot did was very brave. He could have just hid behind the door, but he opened that door and came out to them and told them, "Do not do so wickedly." He could have been, any manner of attack could have come upon him, but he knew that he had special guests in the house, and he was going to protect them. Now, it's difficult to live in a society, as we know, without some of that society wearing off on us, for good or, unfortunately, for evil. And when I look at verse 8, you got to ask, how could a loving father do this to his daughters? But he was probably in panic mode, I would think, desperate to protect his people inside. And that was probably the first thing that came to his head. But only God knows truly the heart and the mind and the spirit of man and what is going on in our minds as we try to process difficult things. But what was Lot thinking when he offered his virgin daughters to that rabble? I mean, hopefully the shameful offer, again, only came from a desperation to protect his guests, especially if Lot knew who his guests were. If Lot didn't know, he was about to find out very, very shortly, because we go to the back to the account, verse 9. They said, "Stand back." Then they said, "This one came in to stay here, and he keeps acting as a judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them." So they pressed hard against the man Lot and came near to break down the door. But the men who were inside, Lot's guests, reached out their hands and pulled Lot into the house with them, and they shut the door. And they struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they became weary trying to find the door. Well, if Lot had any doubt of who these men were, he knew now. By this time, the messengers know with certainty that there are not even 10 righteous in the entire city of Sodom. Their fate has been sealed. For with their report, God has passed judgment on Sodom. So in verse 12, the men tell Lot, "Have you anyone else here? Son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city, take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, "Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. While Lot was convinced of the sincerity of these men, apparently the sons-in-laws weren't having any of it. Verse 15, when the morning dawned, so this kept going on all night, Lot trying to round his family up and get them going. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And why did Lot linger? Why did Lot linger? He believed the sincerity of the messengers, but he was leaving all that he had behind, and he had part of all of his family who didn't believe him and didn't want to leave. At least we could conjecture that part. And he hesitates. You know, it's a difficult thing to process, leaving family and everything you know behind, and he wants them to come with him. Verse 17, it continues. So it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains lest you be destroyed. Then Lot said to them, please know, my lords, indeed now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy by which you have shown me by saving my life, but I cannot escape to the mountains lest some evil overtake me and I die. Interesting here. I read this and I sometimes will go, oh ye of little faith. He believed that God could and would destroy the cities, but it seems he forgot that the same God could and would protect him. But what of us? In reading through all these things that Lot was experiencing and going through, what of us? I think at one time or another, we've all been there where Lot was, having to make critical, difficult decisions on a dime, on the spot. And we waver. How do we work through that? Well, we all, and Lot too, we all must learn to grow in faith and nurture that faith by what we go through in our lives, building on that faith, moving forward. And Lot was no different. Let's continue. Verse 20, Lot continues to dicker with the three men, it seems. See now, this city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. The men said to him, see, I have favored you concerning this thing also, in that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. Well, in verse 23, the sun had risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar. Then the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. So he overthrew the cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. Verse 26. But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Note, brethren, that Lot was obedient to God here, even though he hesitated and couldn't get himself in gear to get out when the messengers kept urging him on. Lot was obedient in obeying the words of the messengers here. Lot believed God. When he said, don't look back, he did not look back, even though he left his life behind him. And we know this because the story about Lot continues. Verse 27. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. Then he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land which went up like the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. Remember here, Abraham had prayed for the righteous in Sodom. Does this include Lot? Does this include Lot? Lot, however reluctantly, was able to leave his home and all that he had worked for, like we just discussed, because in this instance he believed God. Lot obeyed God in the matter, never looking back at his old life. Mrs. Lot, however, could not separate herself from the life she had there. For whatever reason, whether she left family, whether it was just her life and that's all she knew, whatever the reason, she wasn't able to do it. She looked back. And in this is another important lesson for us. For Jesus Christ discussed the fate of Mrs. Lot, as we know, in the book of Luke. That's an important lesson for all of us. Let's look at that lesson in Luke 17. Luke chapter 17, starting in verse 20. Luke chapter 17 and verse 20. This is Jesus Christ, of course, having another discourse with the Pharisees. Now, when he was asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God would come, he answered them and said, the kingdom of God does not come with observation. Nor will they say, see here or see there, for indeed the kingdom of God is within you. Okay, let's skip to verse 26. And we'll see where he's going with this. verse 26, and we'll read down to verse 33, Luke 17, verse 26. And it was, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be also in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, as it was also in the days of Lot. They ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built, they lived life like nothing was going on especially. But on the day, verse 29, that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Here's one of the shortest verses in the Bible and one of the most powerful in verse 32. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. In the book Antiquities of the Jews, Flavius Josephus wrote that he actually saw the pillar of salt that was Lot's wife. If that's true, Josephus came on the scene long after the events of that day, which implies that the pillar that was Mrs. Lot remained for some time after, perhaps as a memorial to those who had come after. Look what happened here. We don't know for sure, but it's possible that Lot perhaps married one of the women of Sodom, as far as Mrs. Lot goes. She could have been an Israelite. It doesn't really say here. But as a member of the city of Sodom, she would have ties to the city and the culture, and she obviously had her family there. And apparently all that had a very large place in her heart, and she couldn't bear to leave it. She couldn't bear to leave it. That misplaced priority cost her her life. What of us, brethren? Are our priorities where they should be? Do we look back on our former life sometimes? Or are we moving forward, always forward and not looking back? The lesson we can learn from Mrs. Lot is do not be tied to this life or the former life, and thereby allowing yourself to be taken by surprise when the return of Jesus Christ comes. Let's go on now back to Genesis 19. I should have said to keep your finger there. I apologize. Genesis 19 and verse 30. And we'll see Lot's escape. 19 and verse 30. And this time we'll read to verse 36, covering a lot of territory here. Okay, verse 30, Genesis 19. Then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him. For he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, the place that he said would keep him safe, he was afraid of now. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is no man on the earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father." So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And in the next couple of verses, we see that this happened again the next night with the other sister. So in verse 36, thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. Again, we have to wonder. You know, Lot was no doubt traumatized by recent events, losing everything he had worked for, losing his wife. But to have this happen not once but twice, It makes me wonder. And the ramifications of his actions that we read about in the next two verses, verse 37, the firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. It's amazing what can happen in a moment of, when we're not paying attention, perhaps, I don't want to say carelessness, but inattention, indiscretion, you know, whatever happens that takes our eye off the ball. But that happened a lot here, apparently. And because of this, the future children of Israel would have two peoples distantly related to them, but causing problems for them in the future. So here ends the story of Lot as it has been preserved for us in the Bible. What have we learned about him, basically? It seems that he learned from being around Abram and his family. We can deduce that. And that manifested itself in his basic overall character. It seems he worked hard. He was a hard worker to attain wealth and status for himself and his family. He was a businessman. He had flocks and herdsmen to guard over them. He cared for his family that he was raising. He was providing for them. And he did good and made wise choices at times. But Lot also made some poor choices in his life at times and allowed things and people in his life that cost him and later others dearly. He made mistakes. He made seemingly selfish choices at times. In other words, this is the point I'm driving at with all this here, Lot was a human being, just like you and just like me, having to make choices about things. Lot was a human being that had to make choices about the things that came across in his life, the events, what happened to him and what he interacted with. Just like us, sometimes choosing and doing wisely, and sometimes not so much. There's one more thing that's said about Lot in the Bible, and we've alluded to it a couple of times, and it's the most important thing that we can learn about him. How was Lot remembered ultimately? What does God say about Lot in the end? Well, we can look to the words of one of God's apostles, the Apostle Peter. If we go to 2 Peter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2. We'll start in verse 1 to get a little bit of background of what's going on here. Peter's discussing the dangers here of allowing deception and sin to creep into our minds. Verse 1, and we'll read up to verse 7. But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who brought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. There will be thoughts, heresies, things that are done that are not in accord with what God has instructed. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment has not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. And now in verse 4, for if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot. Oh, Lot? Righteous Lot? Why was someone who lived where he lived and who allowed and did some of the things that he did considered righteous? Let's go back to what Peter was saying, and we'll continue here. And delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked, that for that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. In verse 9, then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. And that's really what he did with Lot and the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. But the point here is that even the righteous, the just, aren't perfect. Not as long as we're human. It's good news for us, isn't it? Because as we just discussed, Lot was human, just like all of us, and he had weaknesses, just like all of us. But where was his heart? Where was Lot's heart? What was his character? This is what Peter was referring to here. And we can take a look in one verse at Lot's overall attitude while he lived in Sodom. Ezekiel chapter 9 and verse 4. Ezekiel chapter 9 and verse 4, as far as his time living in Sodom. I'm just going to break right into the middle of the account here. Ezekiel 9 and verse 4, the glory of God of Israel had gone up from the cherub, and he called to the man clothed in linen, verse 3, who had the writer's inkhorn in his side, and the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it. Verse 4, this is where Lot's heart was as he lived among the people of Sodom. As long as he lived in Sodom, he did not participate in the depravity of the people around him. Not only did he not participate in it, he sighed and cried over it. His righteous soul was tormented day by day. He resisted. He did not take part in it. And we too, as we well know, live in a society that is becoming more and more like that Sodom of old. And it's getting worse. Is our heart there as well? Do we sigh and cry over the abominations that are around us? Lot made mistakes, yes. But when it really counted, he made crucially good choices. His major actions and his character showed overall that he loved the way of God first and would do his will. It would seem that he learned that from Abraham, and the people around him. He had a good upbringing, it seems. But do we, brethren, do we sigh and cry? We must ask ourselves that. Are we leaving the type of life we see around us behind, making a break from it, as it were, and working toward a true and godly life, working toward righteousness? You know, we just came out of the spring holy days, the time of year when we put special focus on these things. Are we removing and distancing ourselves from sin and evil and replacing those things with love, with the truth and the Word of God? Will we be found righteous in the end as Lot was? So let us remember righteous Lot, lessons from a hard life. For those who were wondering if I was ever going to give you a title for the message, there it is. Righteous Lot, Lessons from a Hard Life, title for the message today. Brethren, let us run the race, as Paul tells us. Let us not give up in the face of trouble. And let us not allow ourselves to be weighed down by those troubles to where it affects us. And especially, let us not desire the type of lifestyle that we see around us. See it for what it is. And let us pull through, leaving sin and evil behind as Lot did, without looking back at our old lives or at the so-called perks of this society. And let us win that crown that's laid up for us and ensure our place in the family of God.